welcome everyone to Citizens Climate University. I'm your host, Brent Seuss, and it's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobby that provides CCL supporters like you and me with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. And tonight's webinar is the first in a series of four webinars that we offer annually that are really designed to help empower citizens throughout the country who are planning to meet with a member of Congress with that basic knowledge that they'll need to help understand Congress and what it's like to lobby as a citizen. So tonight's agenda, we'll get to in just a little bit, but we'll really have the chance to hear from four diverse CCLers about their aha moments. What really clicked for them when they realized the transformative power of citizen advocacy, and what was their story behind that? But without further ado, let's just jump right in and talk about tonight's agenda. What we're going to do is talk first about the role of citizen lobbyists and reclaim that L word overall. Many people are intimidated by being associated with the term lobbying, but we're going to talk about why that's a really important part of CCL's culture tonight and reclaiming that as citizens. We're going to talk about a lot of the research out there that shows the role of citizens in our advocacy is absolutely crucial in shaping members of Congress's opinions on topics, especially where they're undecided still in today's fraught environment even. We're going to have a chance to review stories. We're going to hear from four different CCLers, as I mentioned, and then we're going to review a quick highlight of how to create your own story as you prepare for those meetings as well. We're going to emphasize our advantage throughout all of that as citizens. You know, we're not paid lobbyists. We're here. We have an interest, and we're here in a way that really will be heard. And we'll close with kind of talking and tying this all together about how this all builds relationships. And then from there, we'll open it up for a Q&A discussion. What I'll just do really quick before introducing our first speaker is give a little bit more of a background. So we also have webinars on the role of Congress, having an understanding of how Congress is structured, and really especially even the workload of staffers is really going to help start or build that relationship with your member of Congress. But for tonight, what we're going to do is really key in on what it's like to be a citizen lobbyist. And I think the most important gateway into that, or at least a really effective one for me, is the story of Marshall Saunders, our founder, you know, of CCL. And I think Marshall makes a great case for what it means to be an engaged and an active citizen. You know, for Marshall, his aha moment was when he realized this quote right here on the screen. You can see he says, "Ordinary people like you and me have to organize, have to educate ourselves, give up our hopelessness and powerlessness, and gain the skills to be effective with our government." And, you know, for Marshall, as well as myself and many of us on the line, I know that we feel blessed to live in a country where citizen engagement is actually valued and encouraged. And that word lobbying, you know, can carry with it some negative connotations stemming from the practice of paid professional lobbying. However, for us as citizens, it's not only our right, but our duty to be engaged and express our voice. And I think that ties back to our mantra in CCL that politicians don't create political will, they respond to it. So with that, there's lots of folks in CCL, many of them are on the line tonight, who have firsthand knowledge of how they've become a more effective citizen through their involvement with this organization. And we've asked a few of them to join for this lesson so they can share with you what it means to them. First up is the wonderful Bill Barron. Bill, I'll just give a quick bio for you and then I'll kind of pass the baton. As regional coordinator for the Wild West, Bill is committed to the idea that building relationships is key to our success and is focused on supporting volunteers, encouraging creativity engagement, and building CCL's community through the Wild West's seven states. And you can ask Bill which ones, I guess, qualify as particularly wild here after the call. He's been involved and founded CCL's 12th chapter back in 2010 in Salt Lake City. And I'll pass it to you, Bill, to kind of jump in and share your story.
Oh, thank you, Brett. And thank you for hosting this and running CCU. So thinking about what it is for me to be a citizen lobbyist, you know, before I got involved with CCL, I didn't have much participation in politics at all. And I was really intimidated by the whole view of us as citizens and them as politicians. And I knew that I needed to speak up on this issue because it was so important to me. And so I decided that, you know, in order for me to get to a place where I'm speaking up in that way, I needed to step through my comfort zone in order to get there. And so without holding back, I signed up to come to DC, and I was really nervous about it. And the experience of going into my first meeting was really terrifying to me. I was very nervous. My hands were shaking. It was really difficult to talk. And it was just a transformation for me to go to that meeting and a breakthrough to realize how we all have this voice that we can share as constituents to speak up for what we believe in. So being a citizen lobbyist for me is really being able to walk my own talk, what I believe in. It's working for the greater good. It's an opportunity to connect with people. It was a really good fit for me with CCL because of CCL's approach and our relationship building and values, to know that this was the place that was where I could grow the most and become a more effective communicator, and to stand up for what's so important to myself, and I know for all of us that are on this call. So really my aha moment, I think, was that first meeting with Senator Hatch's office, and the anxiety that I felt for it. And then realizing that, you know, I can speak up and I have a voice, and it's important to do that. And it led me to believe that I could have more breakthroughs and try new things and really find ways that I could advocate for our work through CCL in different and creative ways that I think worked out well for me as a growing experience, and also created ideas that we can share as a community within CCL. There's really a simple reason why we have stereotypes associated with lobbying and why companies pay so much for lobbyists. It's because it works. But really, the main point is, for successful lobbyists, whether they are paid or a passionate citizen, develop relationships. And so for our work, it's really a benefit to us that we don't need millions of dollars to develop relationships. We can actually do it as passionate citizens speaking up for what we believe in. And that the key as far as developing relationships has been proven to be very fruitful. So when setting a legislator's daily agenda, constituents always figure prominently. Any constituent who makes the effort to travel to Washington will almost always get a meeting with a member of Congress or staff. I mean, and really, if you think about it, you know, we are the people that basically hire our congressperson. So they want to hear from us. So we always have that opportunity. And what we found in a survey of congressional staffers is that from the Congressional Management Foundation, that constituents who are able to express an interest and not just an opinion have much more influence. So there's two types of constituents, and they're not always given equal weight. Let me give you an example. If a constituent stands up at a town hall meeting and says, "I think we should reduce our greenhouse gas emissions," that the congressman will file that in one part of his brain. But if that same constituent says, "I think we should reduce our greenhouse gas emissions because my 3-year-old daughter has respiratory problems," you can see that the congressman would file that in a completely different compartment. The person has a much stronger bond to the legislator, and he has a much greater obligation to integrate their concerns into his decision. The lesson here is that constituents with a genuine interest in a story are more likely to have influence than those who are telling the story. So before our examples tonight and later lessons in this series, we want to go through the advantages that we have as citizens compared to paid lobbyists. So we want to take a look at some of the differences between CCL lobbying and professional lobbying, and where we have an advantage. You know, paid lobbyists are hired guns. They're just doing their job and advocating for what they're paid to do. While as citizen lobbyists, we are constituents and we have an important voice that we can share with our members of Congress, and they want to hear from us. Paid lobbyists have an opinion that, compared to what we do as citizen lobbyists, is we're coming, I think, from a much deeper place where this is an important issue to us personally. And that passion is what helps drive the power of our voice as citizens. So the take-home message is that we are offering something very different than what is done before. However, we don't have every advantage. We have a passionate interest in the topic, and we live in the lawmaker's district. So we ought to play to our advantages.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bill. So let's jump in. And for this, we're going to pivot to talking about kind of the role of building relationships. And to begin that journey, what we're going to have first is the chance to learn from the wonderful Bill Bray. Bill has founded the Woodlands chapter of CCL in Chairman Kevin Brady's district, Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. So it's an absolutely critical district in the country on the pathway to passage to get fee and dividend passed. And he's also helped grow membership, and he'll share that story in just a little bit, to well over hundreds and hundreds of members in just over 2 years. And it's also the role of liaison with ExxonMobil and co-lead for Team Oil, an action team within CCL's action directory. Is also a conservative caucus member and lead for CCL's Presbyterian action team. We are just grateful for your time on the line tonight as well.
Okay, thank you, Brett. I lived in Europe for a decade, and when I was there, I saw how we and everyone else was far more efficient with gasoline due to the high petrol taxes. So I wrote my first letter to the first President Bush in 1990, asking for higher energy taxes in the U.S. And when I retired, I wanted to advocate more for carbon taxes and found CCL. And CCL's carbon fee and dividend addressed all the issues that I had and a lot that I hadn't even thought of yet. And CCL's positive and respectful approach to lobbying is wonderful, so it was a perfect match for me. We had five other CCLers in the Woodlands when we started our first chapter in early 2015. We've grown to over 700 members and four chapters in Texas 08, even in our deep red oil and gas region. There's a graph showing our growth in the speaker's notes. We didn't start out with a plan for this growth, but part of the reason for our success was the challenge we had in Texas 08. Our MOC is Chairman Brady, as Brett said, and he's one of the two individual U.S. representatives who can block our bill. He's pretty conservative, and when we started, he was making statements like, the climate is in God's hands, man won't change it one way or the other, no matter what we do. And my constituents don't care about climate change. We've been working with him following the CCL approach, and last June, Chairman Brady wrote a letter to the editor that included the sentence, we need to protect our environment and reduce carbon emissions, but in a fair, responsible, and achievable manner. So we're not there yet, but we're making real headway. One of the CCL objectives is to increase all of our members' personal capacity by increasing our comfort zones. My best example is public speaking and presentations. I've done it throughout my career to audience of tens and occasionally 100, but I never enjoyed it and sometimes I dreaded it. I've done a lot more public speaking with CCL, spreading our wonderful solution, and I'm a whole lot more comfortable with it now. I proved this to myself at last year's Houston Science March when I spoke to almost 10,000 people. I only had 7 minutes, but it was 7 minutes to spread our message to a whole bunch of folks. I worked my entire career in the oil, gas, shipping, and production industry with Esso, Exxon, and ExxonMobil. So I understand that industry pretty well. As Brett said, I'm now the co-lead for CCL's Team Oil, and we're spreading the word on why most of the oil and gas majors really do support carbon pricing and have good business reasons for doing so. This can be a powerful pitch to our members of Congress especially conservative members. There's a link to our last summer's CCU that'll also be in the speaker's notes. It's titled Our Allies for Carbon Pricing, the Oil Majors. I'm also CCL's liaison with ExxonMobil. Our latest success was tabling at ExxonMobil's internal Earth Day event. We signed up 52 new CCLers. So thank you for your time. Keep up the good work with CCL and keep calm and price carbon.
Thank you, Bill. Well delivered. And I think this photo of you conversing with Senator Cruz speaks volumes too about that investment in relationships. And so let's just talk quickly about that. We all, or maybe many of us at least, are familiar with Dale Carnegie's phrase of winning friends and influencing people. And from Bill's example, how do we go about building long-term meaningful relationships with our members of Congress or their staff? And I think, you know, one of the key things to really focus in on Bill's story is to understand where someone else is coming from before preaching them with your own concerns or problems, to really kind of highlight what their interests are and framing it as an important way to help influence their thoughts about an issue that might be connected to that. You can see here that really there's a couple of best practices that CCL recommends. We won't go into depth for all of them, but they're all fairly intuitive. As an advocate, if you start a conversation by asking about a congressman's kid who just went to college, or you know, mentioned that you saw her picture in the newspaper recently at a ribbon cutting, you know, to really break that ice without having it immediately jump in to, you know, why you're there, to have them introduce a bill to, you know, put a price on carbon, return revenues back to households. And remember, this is a slow dance. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And so another way to really win people over is to become a trusted advisor over time and demonstrate that you are a policy expert that can provide reliable information that that member of Congress or their staff really can rely on. It's in part of that reason that lobbyists are so successful at their job is because they know the issue. We have specific information regarding our policy. We have studies, again, that highlight the impacts in our states and districts. We can provide a very valuable service to those districts as a result. And so keeping in regular contact with your legislator helps provide that service, as Bill highlighted, to be a valuable, accountable person to their voters, and to always operate from that perspective of respect, appreciation, and gratitude in the relationship development. It isn't just a slogan. It's really a foundational cornerstone of who we are and how we've built success throughout the country with members of Congress. So what I'd love to do, we've heard from folks that have been involved for many years with CCL. What I'd love to do now is actually pivot to the story of someone that got involved only really in the last year. Debbie Chang provides a window in for advocates to realize that in CCL, you don't have to just be here since the dawning of time to be effective. You can jump right in, and even if you've only been here for a month or two, your impact's immediately appreciated. So let's hear Debbie's story.
Hi, CCU. I'm Debbie. I'm in the Washington, D.C. chapter, and I'm also active in the action team of climate and environmental justice. I'm on the steering committee. And I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person. I'm in California, and I'm visiting my two-month-old niece. So I'm there building those relationships with the next generation. I'm here to share a little bit about how CCL has changed me and helped me in my life. We'll start with the fact that I joined CCL about a year ago in April, and then I joined the June conference when I came to DC. And before the June conference, I was pretty much in despair about climate change. Since the June conference, I have been filled with optimism and confidence. I no longer worry about climate change. I think we're going to solve it. Something else that CCL has helped me with is that the CCL philosophy of learning and listening, it's really inspired me to go and learn more for myself. I now have gained a broader understanding of viewpoints that are different from my own. And for example, one of the reasons I joined Citizens Climate Lobby was when Conservative Director Peter Brin had his video on conservative messaging theory. You can find it on the YouTube channel. And it exposed me to different viewpoints, and I had never thought about climate change from a conservative angle before. The other part of this, as I mentioned earlier, I'm on the Environmental Justice and Climate Justice Action Team. And for those of you who don't know, environmental justice is the idea that the environmental benefits and burdens of policies fall disproportionately on different members of our community. If you are in a poor community, you're more likely to be left in an area which is at high risk for climate disasters like flooding. There is a few sayings in environmental justice, which is that environmental justice shouldn't be an issue that you pick up and put down and think about. It should be a lens by which you view all of your policies. For example, if I look at carbon fee and dividend, I look at it through an environmental justice lens and think, how does this affect and benefit and hurt environmental justice communities? And for that, I want to listen to environmental justice frontline communities and not just people who make plans for environmental justice communities. I'd like to listen to what we call own voices. Environmental justice folks would like to be at the planning process and to be considered early in a process instead of asking them to just sign off on a policy after the fact. So it's important, I think, to build those relationships and to learn and to listen for both conservatives and environmental justice. So I really like these abilities that CCL has given us. On Saturday, I actually went to a local tabling event and I introduced myself to the CCLers at the table and I jumped in and talked to a couple of people. And afterwards, they were like, oh, you were really good. And it was really nice to hear that. I know I expressed a few extra, I was able to use some of my language skills because this is my hometown and I speak a different language than some of the CCLers. And so I was able to talk to immigrants in their own language. And it was really cool and inspiring to be able to have that connection and conversation. So thank you very much for listening to my thoughts about Citizens Climate Lobby. And thank you all so much for everything that you are doing. All of those little things really add up to the power of this organization as a whole. And thank you for doing your part. Good night.
All right. I think what Debbie's main point there, that these relationships that we're developing don't just have to be with members of Congress and their staff as well. That obviously the same tactics that we're talking about tonight that all of you are already involved with throughout all of those communities that are represented on the call tonight are absolutely critical. And we don't just have to focus on Congress, but the people that will be affected by this policy as well. So with that, let's pivot to the final story tonight.
Great, Brett. Thank you. Well, first and foremost, it's clear that congressional offices want to meet with constituents. I mean, that has the most impact. According to congressional staffers, in-person visits from constituents are the most influential way to communicate with a senator or a representative who is undecided on an issue. But as you know, not everyone can come to DC to meet with their member of Congress. So you may be in a constituent-less meeting. Even though no constituents are in the meeting, we still have information about how our policy will impact their district. Remember, that's the most valuable tool we have at our disposal. If you think about it, paid lobbyists are not constituents either. However, they are always meeting with staffers and members of Congress. You are there to act like a policy advisor. Additionally, mention that we have constituents or supporters in the district. In these instances, it's important to consider a couple of things. As a non-constituent, you have a duty, a sacred trust, to complement or enhance the relationship so that the constituents can pick up where you left off. We want to bolster the relationship of the constituents. If there are no constituents in the meeting, assume the role of someone who represents the constituents' interests. Of course, there's a lot more to building relationships than these three things. They can start on this framework, but blossom in many different directions. So once you know your office, are a trusted advisor, and are in frequent contact, then you'll practice situational awareness to figure out how to deepen the relationship.
So let's have a chance to learn about what that might look like from another story standpoint. Mark Gould is the CCL Charleston, South Carolina group leader, has been active with CCL for many years, and I'll turn the floor over to you, Mark, about your story about developing that relationship with Representative Mark Sanford, our lone Climate Solutions Caucus member, also on the Freedom Caucus.
Good. Okay. I'm the group leader for the Charleston, South Carolina area. We are liaisons to Congressman Mark Sanford and James Clyburn, and Senator Tim Scott. We have most of the members of the Charleston group are constituents in Mark Stanford's district. I'm one of the few who is not, but as group leader, I've developed a almost constituent-like relationship with Representative Sanford. My own personal background is I worked in most of my life as an environmental engineer, and I spent a lot of time developing greenhouse gas emissions models to be used for making capital investment decisions, largely in the fertilizer and wastewater treatment industries. When I wound that down and joined CCL, I found that I'm very much beyond outside of my normal skill set, and I'm not a particularly good group manager, but we have been getting things done. Charleston is a city at sea level that is subjected to terrible dry weather flooding. The city is sinking and people are freaking out. The city's going to be spending hundreds of millions to build levees and put in more pumps, stormwater storage tunnels. Mark Sanford's district is a largely affluent district on the coast. His own little plantations on the coast, and he sees his own trees being destroyed each year by the rising saltwater water table along the coastline. So he gets it, and his constituents get it. Brett said he's a member of the Freedom Caucus. He's very committed to small government and balanced budget, and not a great fan of taxes. So, but he is at the same time a highly accessible and responsive congressman. Every time you meet with him in his district office, he sends me a handwritten letter thanking me for my time. It's pretty extraordinary. Some of the things our group emphasizes is a very good relationship with our daily newspaper, the Post and Courier, which is very engaged on the climate issue. We get letters and op-eds in frequently. We also are highly focused on youth outreach. We have an internship program at the College of Charleston, and they have their own subgroup at the college. So getting back to Mark Sanford, he gets it. He has every reason to be engaged on the issue. We were not up against the kind of obstacles that people in a lot of parts of the country are. He has led the charge against coastal oil exploration off the coast of South Carolina. Early on, we encouraged him to sign the Republican Climate Stewardship Resolution, and after a few months of needling, he finally signed it. Then we started to encourage him to join the Nonpartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. It took a number of meetings, a letter to the Post and Courier asking that he join. Finally, our meeting with him and his staff in D.C. in November, we were joined by Jay Butera. And he had a couple of subsequent one-on-ones with Mark Sanford in D.C., after which he joined the Nonpartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. We then wrote a letter to the Post and Courier recognizing this and thanking him for his engagement on the issue. So there's no magic formula here. He was already close and just needed a little nudge. So that's my story.
Mark, thank you so much. And just being able to highlight kind of the step-by-step process and helping especially a lot of us on the call that are looking for that same end result, be able to visualize the steps that your team took to help get that achievement past the goalpost. We really appreciate your leadership in South Carolina.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So the most valuable gift a lobbyist gives a member of Congress isn't a campaign contribution. It's a detailed analysis of how a particular issue affects the lawmaker's district or state. Some state associations, nonprofits, and corporate leaders may offer this data, but many don't. And we can say with certainty that very few beyond our own volunteer network are identifying and researching how carbon fee and dividend affects our legislators' constituents. This is our most valuable tool. We have the information and are trained on how to communicate and deliver carbon fee and dividend.
And so with that, let's just do a quick review. We've got a lot of resources on community about how to build your own story out. You know, we've hit this on, you know, from the very first beginning of climate advocate training, where you've taken that all the way through a lot of the lessons that you might see on the core volunteer training or in the communications activity. But our study guide this year also focuses in on what Bill's mentioned there, on the importance of connecting the dots to local impacts. Really gives you a whole host of resources to look into to help you feel ready to make those dots connected about the local impacts and to have this be a personal upfront story in your own backyard rather than feeling like a far-off impact. And again, just to reiterate, the reason why we say that, one of the organizations that we've worked with for many years, the Congressional Management Foundation, reminds us that citizen advocates are most influential when they actually provide personalized and local information to Congress. You know, for example, one of their studies said that over 90% of staffers that were surveyed said that it's helpful to have information about the impact that that bill or the issue, you know, in this case, climate change or carbon fee and dividend, would have on the district or state. However, less than 10% of those meetings actually provided it. So again, there's a big disconnect between wanting it and actually receiving it, and we can fill that gap with our issue. We also have a core volunteer training on storytelling. It actually features Marshall telling his own story of his own first lobby meeting and how nervous he was that he could only focus on if his legs were crossed and where his arms were, and not really even able to remember what his main point was that he went into the meeting actually focused on saying until somebody else gave him his prompt. But there's a wonderful story there with some slides that will go more in depth. I'm just going to give you the high points here really quick, and that is this. You know, this connects to what we're talking about tonight. There's two ways to share knowledge, one of which is how we've all received it before, pushed at us, the other of which is being pulled in. And how are we pulled in often? With a story. And so let's talk just really quickly about if you're designing your story, and again, this doesn't have to be an elaborate Brothers Grimm 20-chapter page-turner. This can be a simple 1 or 2 minute story that we've had modeled to us tonight by four leaders. You know, it's pretty easy. People have trouble remembering facts, but they certainly don't forget a good story. And really what happens is if you're effective in storytelling, it appeals not only to our head, but also to our heart. And what we're really aiming for is three things. We're hoping that as storyteller, we're going to change the way our audience either thinks, feels, or acts. And if we're really good, hopefully all three of those. And so, again, if the aim of the speaker is to change the way people think, feel, and act, and we think about this preemptively, what's kind of a way to really design the way that we tell our own story? Because each of us on this line tonight have a very powerful story that we can frame in our meetings that we're preparing for in DC. There's a whole bunch of social science research out there, but I'm going to distill it down into three words so that you don't have to remember a lot. The before, the after, and the how. So again, you want to frame this in a way where you, when you have the spotlight, are able to tell kind of the story from the position of what your ask is, using vivid imagery, and hook them from that very beginning. What's that stake? What's it, what's kind of your before moment? Why are you here? Who are you before being involved with CCL? And why are you here? And that's kind of connected with the before. And then the after really is looking ahead at what we face, whether or not we act, right? So what are the impacts that are your that are present in your local district that are already happening or will happen with business as usual emissions? What stories can you tell that really help that lawmaker or staffer frame this issue in a real personal way? And then lastly, that how connects to why you're there. What is the solution that you have to offer? What's the conflict? One of our speakers, Dr. Shiling Su, one of our advisory board members too, reminds us that everyone wants to be the hero of their own story. Everyone wants, you know, we don't want to have kind of good guys and bad guys. How can you invite even that staffer, that member of Congress, to also be a hero in this story? How can you help them keep it positive, focused on an actual message of success, but invite them to also be a part of the solution that you're there supporting? So with that, this isn't a workshop on storytelling, but again, it's a way of kind of highlighting how important it is to have storytelling at the heart of what you're bringing to DC. And just as a quick reminder, you know, even if we don't have more than 15 to 20 seconds, you can still easily make your pitch with that kind of three-word format, before, after, and how, within your meetings. Like the earlier example Bill provided of the mom with an interest, her daughter's respiratory problems, whether you're a farmer, a fisherman, a construction worker, you know, tied into your industry, tied into your profession, whatever you're connected to that's facing impacts and has an interest that needs to be protected, that's why you're in DC. A quick, you know, simple 10-second background you could also rely on, you know, say you've spent 30 years in insurance and you've noticed that, you know, reinsurance of late has seen historic increase in costs. And as a small business owner and a centrist voter, you're there to look out for your own business line and also a policy supported by both sides of the aisle. Something as simple and straightforward as that is a wonderful way to kind of make it personal, tie in those interests, and connect the dots to your own story. Bill and I are actually going to put this all together with a chance to do a communication exercise. Bill Barron's going to play the role of the CCL volunteer, and I'll be the congressional staffer. But with each lobby webinar, you've probably noticed this if you've been on one before, you know, we always kind of want to try to include an actual demonstration of these communication skills. We also need to keep practicing asking these questions and a way of identifying values, building that relationship that we've talked about tonight. So the content of what we're just going to present here in a little bit isn't the important part. Rather, what's important is the adaptive process that Bill's going to highlight as the CCL volunteer in this demonstration. Pretend he just gave that insurance story, and then we're going to jump right into the meeting that he uses to draw out more information from me, the person that he's meeting with. So listen carefully to what he does to draw out more information and how he identifies values. And again, you know, the situation is Bill, as the CCL volunteer, has just explained his own story as well as how the dividend works. Here we go. This looks like a form of income redistribution to me, Bill.
That's interesting. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, obviously, wealthier people are paying more for the carbon fee than poor people, so they're going to come out behind.
I'm wondering if this is an issue of fairness to you.
Yes, it definitely is. I think that everyone should be treated the same way.
Well, you know, that matters to me, too, that things are fair. That's why I like that everyone gets the same dividend instead of some people getting more and some less. Does that seem fair to you?
Well, when you put it that way, I guess yes, but there are still winners and losers.
You're right. There are. Why do you think that is?
I suppose, because people's footprint, you know, obviously some of us use more fuel than others, and those people that do have costs that go up.
Yeah, I think you're right. We have some data that shows exactly how people in your district would fare under a carbon fee and dividend. Would you like to take a look at that now?
Sure. So we'll pause there. This is but one example of many on an issue, and you know, hopefully picked up on how Bill asked questions right from the start. He did so to really understand and determine what my underlying value of income redistribution meant. And I loved throughout that whole process, Bill, how you really sought to agree on that common ground of what we kind of value together. But think about how different that conversation feels, you know, if immediately following my income redistribution comment, Bill were just to have launched right into describing the household impact study as if, you know, he was telling me that I was wrong immediately without really keying in on my resistance. Instead, what he did was, you know, steer the conversation towards finding common ground and asking that permission before jumping into what he's learned. I always love ending with some takeaways. So again, you know, Bill mentioned a specific example of the advantage that we have as citizens compared to paid lobbyists, our most influential tool being able to show those impacts in district, having an interest rather than just a concern, specifically tying it to your own story, and really grounding all of this with a long-term marathon stride of respect, appreciation, and gratitude. I'll close with this quote too. I think that oftentimes people feel they don't know if they can't make a difference. I think the Dalai Lama summed it up best. If you feel like you are too small to make a difference, try sleeping with a mosquito. So with that wisdom, know that all of you are already making a difference where you're at. Here is the screen I'll close with so that people can see everyone's email if they're interested in being in touch with anyone with the stories that they've shared tonight. Here's the homepage for our lobbying lessons. And the last thing I'll close with is just thanking everyone for being on the line tonight. We hope that you found it useful. We hope you found it motivating. And a big round of applause for all of our speakers again. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Debbie. Thank you, Bill. Double Bill. And if there's anything we can do to help support you in your preparations before Washington, stay on and ask any other questions. We're so grateful for you attending tonight.